Good morning, Steve Dale on WGN. I am sure you all celebrated National Veterinary Technician Week. I know I did. Seriously, I think that's really important. Veterinary technicians, without technicians, veterinary medicine would be nothing like it is today. Nothing, nothing, nothing. We need technicians. We need to appreciate technicians and demonstrate our appreciation. In fact, I'm doing that. I will have a technician on this program, Becky Mosser, to help you, talking about ticks and tick disease, because this is their party time. Ticks, really, this is when they're out infecting dogs more than any other time of year. Dr. Vicki Thayer is the executive director of the Wynn Feline Foundation, past president of the Wynn Feline Foundation, former board director of the Wynn Feline Foundation. In fact, she has done everything except she was not the founder of the Wynn Feline Foundation, which goes back about 52 years funding cat health studies. It's a non-for-profit. And we're here to talk about diabetes. So October, Cures for Cats Month. And November, as it happens, is National Diabetes Month. And the Wynn Feline Foundation is focusing fundraising right now, anyway, on diabetes in cats. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about diabetes in cats, Dr. Thayer. First of all, is it like diabetes in people?
I would say yes, very much so. In cats, probably the most common form is called type 2 diabetes, and that's very similar to type 2 diabetes in people. So very, very, very similar.
And the treatment is somewhat the same, although there are some differences, too. I don't think many doctors, human doctors, say, get out a feather toy and move a little bit. But movement's important. Weight loss can be important. And insulin is important. Am I right about all those things?
Correct. All of those make a big difference. And there's also some additional help, and that's with diet, too, for cats, much like it is for people.
Yeah, yeah. So let's kind of take one of those at a time. Even backing up before that, to me, left untreated diabetes is, can it be a death sentence, actually, for cats left untreated?
Definitely. It can, no question, you can get significant health issues, and it can be fatal in cats. If it's not treated or controlled, managed in some form, much the same as it can be for people. So it is life-threatening.
And the best way to get a handle on it, I presume, the earlier the better, early diagnosis. Cats cannot wave their paw up and physically tell us, I'm not feeling quite right. In fact, they may feel fine. There may be signs, though, that we can look for. But to me, here's where I'm going with all this. This is an argument for twice a year. Yeah, that's right. I said twice a year visits to the veterinarian for anyone who has any cat. Because diabetes, yes, it more often occurs in overweight cats. But the cats aren't necessarily going to tell us that they have it until it's very bad that we see the signs of diabetes. And it doesn't always happen in overweight cats. Am I right about all that?
You're very correct. There are certainly four main signs that cat parents can look for with cats that may have diabetes, and that's increased thirst, drinking more water, urinating more, fluid or more urine, eating more, and losing weight while they're eating more. So very similar to people, and so those are four key things to look for.
And I could
add a veterinarian about. Sorry.
That's okay. So I could add a fifth, actually, and that would be cats urinating outside the litter box because they're drinking more and they don't necessarily make it to the box on time. That can also be a sign of diabetes. So, yes, going to the veterinarian can be helpful. And then how does the veterinarian determine that cat has diabetes?
Well, veterinarians usually will take a very good history so they can get a lot of clues from talking to their clients, and then also examining the cat. And then what they will look to do is get blood samples and samples of urine and look for elevated levels of glucose in the blood and in the urine. And that oftentimes will lead them to see that this cat is a diabetic.
You know, I'm so much a fan of cat-friendly veterinary practices and Fear-Free, an initiative also in veterinary medicine, which minimizes fear, anxiety, and stress of those visits, helping to make cats feel, and it's possible, it really is, more comfortable, maybe not happy, but at least not too unhappy at the veterinary office. And one of the reasons for that, I believe, is that potentially, if you have a terrified cat, blood work can actually be skewed, and it would be difficult for the veterinarian to read. The other reason why I want those regular visits is what's normal for one cat isn't always normal for another. So if the veterinarian hasn't seen your cat for 5 years, how do you know what normal is?
Yes, definitely. Just looking at trends with that particular patient, there's no question you're mentioning stress at a veterinary visit or stress at all for a cat can elevate levels of blood glucose. So we have to do sometimes additional testing to determine is that cat truly a diabetic or just one that's stressed. Also, again, knowing that patient, seeing them more frequently really helps us determine these trends.
All right. Now, cat is diabetic. Veterinarian says your cat is diabetic. And many of us are terrified, sometimes because we're terrified of needles, because you're going to probably have to give your cat insulin. I would argue it's easier to do that than to give a cat a pill in most cases.
Yes, no question. And usually for cats, when you're giving insulin, and most of the time you're doing it twice a day, it's pretty small doses and very, very small needles. And veterinarians and oftentimes the technicians or nurses that work at the practice spend a lot of time with their clients and the cats to help them learn how to give the injections and how to minimize stress and help these patients.
And weight loss, we talked about at the very onset of this, that can be a big part of the solution, so much so that with insulin and with a diet change and with exercise along with the weight loss, just like in people, then potentially that cat can revert and no longer, at least for a time, be diabetic.
That's correct. We aim and we want to see that these cats can be managed potentially more lifestyle with diet and exercise and environmental enrichment, not necessarily need insulin. So we want to reach the point where we're not having to give them insulin.
Now, with people measuring insulin, I have friends that are diabetic, but I believe we're pretty good at that, and we need to get better even in people so they don't have to grab that box of raisins necessarily, or maybe even it's too late for that box of raisins and people land in the hospital with diabetic crashes or diabetic spikes. In cats, how good are we at measuring how much insulin a specific cat needs?
I think, you know, there have been a lot of what we call protocols that have been developed. I think that many cat parents have learned how to take small samples, blood samples, and do much like people do as far as with glucose meters. And one thing with Wing Feline Foundation and future studies that we're looking at is the value of the continuous glucose monitoring for use in cats, much like they do with people. And these monitors have been very valuable for people to really monitor themselves as far as low blood glucose levels or too high. It really gives a very good balance, and I think we can do much the same with cats as we learn more.
So little glucose monitors that cats walk around with. And what else is happening and how you can help cats? We'll talk about all of that and more when we come back. Dr. Vicki Thayer, Wing Feline Foundation on WGN. Dr. Vicki Thayer is here. She is the executive director of the Wing Feline Foundation, WINN Feline Foundation. Let's do a basic sort of quick 101 on what the Wing Feline Foundation is, Dr. Thayer.
Wind Feline Foundation, what we do is we fund cat health studies. So really the future of cat health, and even today, we take funding from donors, and we give that money to researchers out there where they find answers to help us know more about cancer, how we can help cats with cancer, diabetes, kidney disease, dental disease, heart disease. So we're there to find answers, you know, for cat health.
Uh-huh. And one thing we're talking about, well, it's diabetes, because October is Cures for Cats Month from the Wind Feline Foundation. But nationally, November is National Diabetes Month. And we're talking about the connection, and there is one. There's a One Health connection between diabetes in people and diabetes in cats. You were talking about little glucose monitors that the Wind Feline Foundation is supporting research for. I can't see cats walking around with little glucose monitors. Maybe that's how it works. I don't know. How does it work?
Well, they're actually little sensors, and you get, monitors or small readers, and these sensors essentially just stick to the body wall with a little needle that kind of inserts through the skin, and you just do readings as you need to. They tend to last for about 2 weeks, and actually you don't even notice that they're there. And I think there are a lot of veterinarians who are looking at these and considering them for their patients.
Sure. So those studies were done by the Wind Feline Foundation. And in fact, the initial studies, I happen to know, that discovered how diabetes in cats even works, which we talked some about earlier, also funded by the Wind Feline Foundation, WINN Feline Foundation. I know you're here also because you're looking for cat lovers to help out.
No question. The only way that we can find the answers for heart disease or kidney disease, and we can actually improve and save lives of cats, thousands of cats around the world, we have to do it through support from cat lovers everywhere. And that, again, funding is gathered, and we go out and fund the best science we can find to find these answers to help cats. Examples are finding that missing taurine amino acid in cat foods.
Yeah, cat
that
foods
had to be added to food, cat food.
Right.
And it caused heart disease in cats. Correcting that, millions of cats have been affected over the years.
Absolutely. I know that was research funded by the Wind Feline Foundation. To learn more, WINN, felinefoundation.org, winfelinefoundation.org. Dr. Thayer, thank you so much.
Thank you, Steve.
Becky Mosser is a registered veterinary technician. She is a podcaster. She's a broadcaster. She's a writer. She's a speaker at veterinary conferences. She's everything. Hello, Becky.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
I'm good, except because I don't have any tick bites. But if I did, what would that demonstrate? Would it demonstrate that they're out there and the dogs could get them too? And does it work both ways? If your dog has gotten bitten, it means you could too.
Sure. We want to keep in mind that dogs cannot infect people with zoonotic diseases that are manifested by ticks, but that both people and pets can be affected with a lot of the same diseases by the same ticks.
So there's kind of a fancy way of saying that if the ticks are out there and they get your dog, they can get you too, but you're not going to get tick disease from your dog, directly from your dog.
That's right, and don't forget about cats. A lot of times we forget that cats can get ticks because they're such great groomers and they don't tend to be outside, but they're absolutely susceptible as well.
Yeah, and that's a really important point. So some of those tick diseases we don't think affect cats, but we don't know for sure. And others we know can make cats very, very sick, in fact, kill cats, like one called bobcat fever or cytozoonosis.
That's right. Cytozoid and Felis is one of the most deadly tick-borne diseases in cats. And when I was in school, one of the things I was taught is, you know, one of the first signs of cytozoan is death. And so it's a very dangerous disease for cats.
Yeah, so the good news is, at least today, as opposed to when you were in school, there's a fairly new treatment available. It's expensive, and it doesn't always work. So, yes.
Right, and you've got to catch it in time, right? And that's the big problem.
Yeah, so definitely everything we talk about today, I think, is going to be about prevention, right?
It really is, because, you know, the truth of the matter is most of these tick-borne diseases are lifelong diseases. Most of them we don't actually rid the body of. We just kind of suppress the symptoms. And so these are lifelong preventable diseases, and that's a soapbox I tend to get on, is why are we even still seeing them if they are preventable?
All right, and let's talk about the one people know arguably the most about, and that's Lyme disease in dogs. Same thing, preventable, but what happens if our dogs do get Lyme, and what are some symptoms?
Well, you know, so we have the disadvantage of them not being able to tell us, and so we have to go basically off of, one, human symptoms that we see reflected in our pets. And so what we know in people is that they become extremely lethargic. We see dogs become anorexic, lethargic. We sometimes see some shifting leg lameness or joint swelling and pain. We haven't really proven headaches in dogs or cats, but I don't see any reason to think that they wouldn't have them. And just an overall really crappy feeling.
Yeah, it feels like presumably the dogs feel yucky, like they have the flu every single day, or sometimes it wanes, you know. So sometimes the dogs are absolutely fine, sometimes they're not. I think a low fever might be a part of this as well. But who takes their dog's temperatures? So again, we're talking about the best thing to do is prevention. And if you live in an area where there's lots of Lyme, there's even a vaccine.
Yeah. And honestly, what we always recommend is that double whammy. And honestly, geographically, Lyme is everywhere. And we just see so much movement of people and pets nowadays. And I think it's actually going to get more extreme with COVID. Steve, you've been talking a lot about separation anxiety in people and pets after this crazy COVID stuff is up and we're moving around more. So I think people are not flying as much. And so they're driving for their little staycations or vacations. And in that case, you know, pets get to go. And so it's not just about where you live, but it's also about where you go and where the pets around you are from.
So, you know, if you go over the counter, I'm glad you brought this up, Becky. If you go over the counter and just pick a tick product, that one over there, because it's on sale, or I can reach it where I can't reach the one way up there, or it's got a cute Cocker Spaniel on the packaging, and I have a Cocker Spaniel. Ticks, certain species are in certain places, and your veterinarian will know exactly what you need, and that may be different if you're traveling halfway around the country.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And not just that, but what we also see is the labeling for these products we have to be really careful about, because they may say that they are tick preventatives or parasiticides, meaning that they will kill parasites, but they might only be labeled for certain ticks for certain durations, or like you said, not even all of the ticks. We have to be really careful about the preventative we use. And we also know that, you know, when we get these products from our veterinarian, and at the very least a product that's recommended by a veterinarian, we keep our pets safe. But we also can kind of benefit from the guarantees of the product.
Absolutely right. All good information. Becky Mosser, thank you so much.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
A lot of you may not know this. This, right now, is the time of year when ticks are most likely to infect dogs, specifically with Lyme disease. What you can do about it, next.
Blah, 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 blah. Halloween. Scary.
It won't be the same this year, I know that, but some people may still go ding, dong, ding, dong, ding, and ring the bell. And some dogs just love that. Some cats don't mind it either. I'm concerned about even the ones that love it, because the door opens and opens and opens and opens and opens. Social distancing or not, the door is opening and opening and opening, and out runs the dog. So please be very careful. So many pets get lost on Halloween. Make sure the pet is microchipped. Make sure the pet dog or cat even has tags on. Yeah, cats can wear tags. Ideally, it's a good thing to do, because you just never know. And if you're concerned, or if the pet doesn't like ding dong, the doorbell ringing and ringing and ringing, put the pet off into a second bedroom, the den, or downstairs, or somewhere to keep the pet safe, but also so the pet isn't stressed. If you have a pet that gets stressed when that doorbell rings and rings and rings and rings and rings and rings and rings, put the pet off somewhere else. And turn on some certain talk radio station, maybe, on your Alexa, WGN, or on the radio. You know, you can go old school if you want. The point is that then there's some background noise going on, and close the windows so the pet doesn't hear the trick-or-treaters. And also, let's lower that anxiety so you can plug in a pheromone diffuser, Adaptil for dogs, Feel Away for cats. And our pets are not very good at multitasking. So if you can get the pet busy with a food treat of some kind, you know, the food dispensing toys that the pet works on to get the dog is like that to get the peanut butter out. Low fat, low salt, please. Well, then the dog isn't so worried about all the other things happening, those ghosts and goblins making all those noise. To all of you, happy Halloween! Blah, 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 blah! Doc Emmerich, yes, legendary hockey broadcaster, will be right here next week.